Welcome everybody to Queen's. It's lovely to see people who I don't usually see around the campus with us today. And I'm looking forward to a conversation rather than a talk. So my talk is a prelude to a conversation, setting a context. What I'm going to do is talk about some facts, talk about the issue of women in politics and the underrepresentation, and the fact that it really is a topic that's very much on part of everyday conversation these days. It's on people's lips. Looking at the area of gender quotas in political life, and looking at what effect they have had. Looking at the arguments that are presented against gender quotas, and looking at the evidence that might counterbalance some of the arguments that are presented, and then looking at Northern Ireland and looking to see where are we and do quotas have a place, and it's at that point that we can open up the conversation. Okay? So that's the plan. So let's begin with some facts. Where women are in politics. If we look across the European Union, we can see from these blue lines that women's representation is very varied across the European Union. So you have Finland and Sweden at one end of the scale on the left-hand side, with over 40% women in Parliament and 55% men in Parliament. So there's a good, what we would call, gender balance there. They're in that band of 40 to 60%. And at the other end of the spectrum, we have Hungary with 90% men and 10% women in their Parliament, and Romania with a little bit small increase on that, with about 12 or thereabouts percent women and 88% men. And in between all the other countries, we find the UK with just under 25%, just under a quarter, and we have Ireland with 15-16% women, which is 84% men in Parliament. So that's just to give you a broad picture. If we were to say, well, where does the UK and Ireland stand in relation to world averages, we would find that Britain is in 56th place in the world, and we're talking about a world of over 120 parliaments of this kind, and Ireland is in 84th place. So there's... we're not right up there at the top, that's for sure. And so this is a question that has challenged and puzzled academics such as myself. It has also challenged and puzzled women in political life as well for a long time, and is increasingly being questioned by the general public. Why are there not more women in politics? That's just another little slide that shows you that over the last number of years, since 2003, there has been a little bit of an increase. If you look at the black, darker graph, you see that there are six European countries with less than, with 10 to 19% representation, 11 European countries with 20 to 29% representation, but very few countries with more than 40%. That's just another way of making the point I had said earlier. So why does it matter to have more women in politics? And usually the answer that is expressed by men and women in politics themselves says that women politicians bring to politics a view and perspective that is not already there from men. And basically, that's what they say. As experienced politicians, such as that German male MP. And I picked that out because it was said by a man, and it was said by somebody that was not from these islands. And also from a country where, traditionally, there have not been very many women represented in Parliament, but today there are. It's about 33% of the German Parliament is made up of women. And so we find that politicians themselves acknowledge that when women come into parliamentary life and come into political life, that they bring to the table perspectives and issues that are not already there at the table. And that's often the really big fundamental argument for having more women in politics, that it ultimately leads to better decision-making. There are many other arguments that are brought forward as well, such as that it's a matter of justice. It's a matter of democratic justice because women comprise half the population, so they should comprise half of those who make the decisions, public decisions, on our behalf. That's another very strong argument. And there's a third argument which says that the more women there is in political life and visible in making decisions, the more likely it is that women as citizens are likely to engage in politics and likely to be interested in politics as well. And that, again, that role model argument is also a very strong argument. Interestingly, it is true, it has been shown to be the case, that when women stand for election and are seen as being MPs or being representatives, that actually women in that constituency are more likely to turn out and vote. Interestingly, the role model effect is particularly important for early teenage girls, as well as girls and boys, but more so for early teenage girls. So I think that's a very important argument in its own right. But I think substantively, the issue that when you have women making political decisions along with men, that multiple perspectives can be brought to bear on these issues, and they don't have to be women's issues alone. They can be many different kinds of issues that a country or a society faces, and that those perspectives together lead to better decision making. So, as a consequence, there have been a lot of questions raised as to why we don't have a parliament composed of equal numbers of women and men. And this is a very current campaign, the petition for a 50-50 parliament campaign that's been run on Twitter and social media at the moment. And is very very vibrant, and is making quite an impact on certainly the social media, but also the wider discourse and discussion around these elections, and saying, well, after this general election, are we going to have a parliament that is more gender equal or not? And this is the 50-50 Parliament campaign on the steps of Westminster Hall. This campaign wants to have a debate in Parliament on all the solutions that can lead to a gender-balanced Parliament. And that means all the solutions. It just doesn't mean one solution. It means everything. And you can see why. Because clearly the House of Commons is not gender equal, not even gender balanced, which would be 40% female, 60% male. Okay, so the question is, what's happening along the way that we don't have gender balanced parliaments in the first place? Because women are taking their roles, their leadership roles in society in all forms of decision making. Why is it not happening in politics? And I think One of the reasons why it's not happening in politics is because there are many filters to get into political life. And these are some of the filters that you can see. From all of the citizens who are eligible and available to run for political office, you then have to extract from that a subset of citizens who would like to be in politics. And not everybody wants to be in politics. Okay, so that's a big filtering mechanism in the first place. For the people who want to be in politics, and obviously many of them, but not all, will join a political party, they then have to seek to be nominated to run for political office. They have to become candidates. And not everybody in a political party will want to be a candidate. But many people in the political parties, many women that I have spoken to in political parties, would love to have the opportunity to be a candidate, but often can't get to be nominated. And this seems to be the big barrier. This seems to be the stumbling block, this point here, the point of nominees, point of getting nominated. Now let's think about that for a moment. Where is that point of nomination happening? It's happening within political parties. It's not happening out in the general public. It's not happening in the chattering classes. It's not happening in civil society. It's the political parties that make those decisions about who it is they present to the electorate. And this is the point at which we have the issue. Subsequently, there is a matter of being a candidate and being elected. Great, but then we're back out to the public again, and the voters will make their choices as they democratically should. And that's fine. But I think it's important to emphasise that, you know, it's at this point in looking for a nomination to run, becoming a candidate, that we have the stumbling block. And gender quotas have been one of the mechanisms used to open the opportunities for women to become candidates, to break that stumbling block barrier. Now, we are all very familiar, I'm sure, with other kinds of social pressures on women not to run, all kinds of financial aspects to all of that. And all of those can be dealt with in a wider sense. When it actually comes to the nomination process, it's about can parties give women the opportunities to run? And that's where quotas come in. But the quotas come in different kinds. And I'm going to move now to quotas and their effects. Come in different kinds, not just one. There are the legal quotas, where laws are enacted by a government to provide that parties must run a certain proportion of male and female candidates on their tickets. We'll come to that in a minute. There are voluntary party quotas. Many parties lay down their own rules and say, well, when we're running for election, 25%, 30%, 40%, whatever number of our candidates must be women, and we go about making sure that that is the case. Or even 50% of our candidates must be women and 50% men. So they adopt this voluntarily, okay? And so they're the main forms of quotas that are used in Europe. And then there are many parties that don't have anything, don't have any provisions. And you can see in Europe, in the European Union, that parties and countries with legal quotas, in other laws, have on average a higher representation of women in political life than in countries where there are only party quotas, which is voluntary, or in countries with nothing at all. Okay? So, in other words, they do have an effect. Let's see what countries might they be. And here we have the countries in Europe where there are different quota laws The level of the quota law, whether it applies to national politics or local politics or both, and what happens if that quota law is not adhered to. And you can see, for example, in Belgium, there is a 50% candidate quota. 50% of the candidates must be women, 50% must be men. The parties have to do that. If the parties don't do that at the national level and at the local level, well, the party list can't go forward. That party can't run any candidates for the election. So they're told, go. Their electoral commission basically says, your party isn't reaching, complying with the law, go back and think again and rebalance your candidate slates. So that's the sanction in Belgium. In France, what happens is that the party subsidy is cut, and cut quite significantly, or their list is declared invalid. That has had a much greater effect at local level than at national level. At local level, as I will show you shortly, it has led to women and men being pretty much equally represented at local level. At national level, the parties have said, well, we just prefer to pay the fine. And they go and pay millions of euro because they can afford it. They have the money to do so. So there are various other quota laws there. If we go back to the bottom here, Spain. Now, I haven't included Ireland in that list because I'm going to speak about Ireland in a moment. But again, at the bottom of the list there, you have Spain, where there's a minimum quota of 40% women and 40% men. And again, the party list, party can't run candidates if they don't adhere to this. What has been the effect? The effect has been quite dramatic. As you can see, in most instances, this is over since 2003, in most instances, women's representation has increased in all of those countries. I will point in particular to Slovenia, which is quite dramatic. I don't have a little pointer here, but it's the light green line. So excuse me, I'm just going to go over here to point that out to you. This point here, moving up. So Slovenia, in 2011, their gender quota law came into effect for national politics, and you can see the increase in women's representation. But anywhere you see that increase, that's been where the quota law has come into effect in that country. Belgium has been up there from the beginning, but Belgian law has been enacted since the 1990s, so it's even before that chart starts. Okay, but if we were to go back further, we would see the same spiking for Belgium. Okay, so that's that. And at regional level or local level, again, we see the same effect, of women's representation increasing in these countries where the quota law is taking effect. These are the eight countries with legal quotas, and the trend has been generally upward. And here is the Irish legislation, where I left Ireland out of that, the last slide. And the Irish legislation was enacted in 2012. And it basically says that party funding is going to be reduced if parties don't field at least 30% candidates as female at the next election. And the next election, that was 2012, by the next election, they mean the election coming up in 2015-16. So coming up in about a year's time at most. Okay? It also says that 7 years after that, that proportion increases to 40%. So that's on the statute books south of the border. parties are working very hard now to make sure that they can reach the at least 30% candidate gender quota. Selections are taking place at the moment. So that's the scenario in terms of quota laws. Now we're going to look at assumptions and arguments about quotas. There are two, if you like, essential arguments here. They come in many different guises, but if you want to reduce them to a pithy soundbite, they are that quotas lower the quality of the candidates that are being run. That's one of the arguments against gender quotas in politics. And this is, if you like, a little quote afterwards, at that point, that suggests that idea. Women could be selected for positions for which they might not necessarily be the best possible candidate. That's one argument. You hear that very often. Second argument you hear is that they're unfair, that they are discriminating against men. And that's the argument that the second quote gives us, that they discriminate against men, so therefore shouldn't happen. Often allied with the unfairness argument is that because they are unfair to men, they are patronising to women, because they are encouraging women into a position that maybe they wouldn't want to be in the first place, and therefore not doing women any favours. So these are the main arguments. What I would like to present is some evidence that says that contradicts these claims. New research tells us two things: that quotas don't actually decrease the quality of the candidate, that they raise the quality of the candidate being presented to the electorate, both women and men. It actually raises the quality of the men going forward for election. That has to be good. And the second is that quotas are never introduced in situations where things are absolutely fair, such as in Sweden, such as in Finland. There's no quota legislation there. Things are, and yet, as we saw, Sweden and Finland are well over 40% women in parliament. So there's gender balance between women and men in parliament. So quotas are seen as a tool or a mechanism to introduce fairness into the political system. Yes?
How is quality measured?
Well, that's a very, very good point. Very good point. And I think we will come on to that now. Okay? So, this is the research. This research from Sweden examined the effect of quotas, and these are voluntary quotas now, these are party voluntary quotas, on the lists of political parties. And it found that the competence levels of both women and men was higher in general, and it raised the competency of the men on the list. And this is often measured by level of education, for example, highest level of education, skill base, and those kinds of measurable indicators. So the finding, the conclusion from that study said that mediocre men are being replaced by more highly qualified women. And for the group of men, that lower qualified men were no longer part of the electoral process. Okay? So that was from Sweden. This was a study from Britain, which examined the effect of the all-women shortlist women as against all the other MP, Labour MPs that were elected in 1997. Okay, so all the shortlist women that were elected versus the women and men that were not all women shortlisted us were not shortlisted. Okay? And they found no significant difference between the quality, between the standard of education, the standard of income, the standard of competence in terms of other skills that an elected representative needs, between quota women, or the all women shortlists, and their non-quota colleagues. What they also found was that the voters didn't care whether these people came through a quota system or not. Voters didn't care. And they also found that in terms of further progression of political careers, that the women that came through the all-women shortlist were not perceived by their own decision makers within their party as being any less qualified for promotion within that party as any other. So they were seen as being as equally capable and meritorious of promotion. Okay? We also find, and this is moving a little bit outside of the political world, but increasingly in the corporate world and in the economic world, a lot of attention is being paid to the diversity on boards, on senior decision making. And another study, but this time on senior corporate boards, socially gainful gender quotas, found that when the signal is out there that this is basically an arena for men, highly qualified women will not apply to be part of it. When there is a mechanism in place, such as a quota, that signals to women that you are that you can hope to be included in this arena, then highly qualified women will apply for those positions. Doesn't mean they necessarily get them, but it means that the message is sent out, you can be part of this, and they respond by applying. So, in the economic sector, this research concludes that quotas actually promote more fairness and reward merit as measured in the economic world in top decision making. So in a way, it's reinforcing the research findings of the political studies that we have mentioned earlier. And very recently as well, the CEO of Vodafone basically said, we have to have more women in the boardroom, and of course, if quotas is a way of doing it, well then, that's the way we have to do it. Because she asked the key decision, the key question here. She says, companies with boards made up almost entirely of men must ask themselves whether they, the boards, are sufficiently informed to make the right decisions. If a CEO of Vodafone has that insight into decision making in the corporate sector, what's the difference in between that and decision making in the political world? Because basically, our executive, our government, are basically the board of directors of the politics and political decision making in our lives. And if that board is completely composed of men, or majorly composed of men, are they informed enough to be able to take the right decisions for the public? And so these are the questions that the economic and corporate world present as a challenge to politics and the political world. So, looking at Northern Ireland and bringing more women into politics. So, a little bit more on that. Where do we go from here? This comes from the Women and Power study, the recent Women in and Power study on decision making, and we find that third from the top is the Northern Ireland Assembly. Members of the Northern Ireland Assembly, 19% of them are women. Okay. Members of the National Assembly for Wales are at the bottom, 42%. Pretty good going. Members of the Scottish Parliament, 35%. So Northern Ireland is somewhat behind. There's more women proportionally in the House of Lords than there is in the Northern Ireland Assembly. So there's an issue there. If we were... Well, I think I have another slide here. Yes, here we have the devolved legislatures and the pattern. This is in a little bit more detail. The pattern of women's representation since around 1998 when these devolved legislatures came into being. And we find that the bottom line is that of the Northern Ireland Assembly. So we haven't yet gone beyond 20%. All the others are in the 30% plus category. Okay? So that's the a story there over time. So what you could say is there is a nice little gradual increase in women's representation in the Northern Ireland Assembly. We don't have to do anything because things will happen over time. It'll all be okay. Well, if we take that gentle rate of progression, we have a little look at how long it will take to reach parity between women and men. So hopefully when we come back here in 2086, we will all be able to congratulate ourselves on the fact that gender parity has been reached in the Northern Ireland Assembly, provided, of course, we still have an assembly in 2086, which I'm quite sure we will. Okay,
2086. Great-granddaughters somewhere in that range.
There you go, look. So, there we have two little girls born today. That rate of progress... They will be two women of over 70 years of age when parity between women and men is reached in the Northern Ireland Assembly. If we keep going at the gentle rate of progress that we have. That's our option, that's our challenge. If we choose to do that, that's what we are settling for. I don't think that women and men of Northern Ireland want to settle for that. I think women and men of Northern Ireland want to see greater equality in the Assembly and at all levels of decision making long before then. And in that regard, I think we have to welcome the Women in Politics report that has been produced by the Assembly and Executive Review Committee and published only on Monday. Okay. That has been a report that has been under consideration for at least a year, and work has been going on in that regard for a long time. These are the main findings and recommendations of the report. There are five main recommendations, and each of those has sub-recommendations. But basically, the report by the Assembly and Executive Review Committee says that the underrepresentation of women in politics, number one, is a serious issue, and number two, has to be addressed as a matter of urgency. Good. So they have four other categories where they feel that different parts of the political system have to play a role, which is excellent, and all their findings for each of these are written in the report. The final bullet point, the committee considered but could not agree on the introduction of gender quotas. Now, that is a complex issue in relation to Northern Ireland because elections to the Assembly are not within the power of the Assembly itself. All right, they're controlled. The parameters are outside of the Assembly. They are held by Westminster, the Westminster Parliament. However, what about local government? We can do something about local government ourselves and local politics ourselves. That's within the review of the Assembly and the Executive to do something about if they wished. Nonetheless, what is important in relation to this report is that all parties reached cross-party agreement on addressing the issue of women in politics. And there was a debate in the Assembly on Monday at which 14 MLAs spoke, 7 of them were men, 7 of them were women. Not once did they say that encouraging women into politics would lead to a dilution of the quality of politician that we have. Not once did they say that. Not once did they say that we should not put special measures in place to promote women in politics, and they agreed on a wide range of special measures. They could not agree on the introduction of quotas, but they could agree on the introduction of a wide range of special measures. And I think one of those special measures could be voluntary party quotas, if they wished. So the Deputy Chair of the Assembly Executive Review Committee points to the fact that consensus was reached on all of their recommendations and that this matter should be a priority for many. Alistair Ross from the DUP says, well, if 50% of the population are women, then a representative assembly should have 50%, be composed of 50% women and men. Now, the DUP and Alistair was not necessarily in favour of quotas, but is prepared to accept that that there is an issue, a representation issue here that needs to be addressed. Anna Lowe says that Dame Rosemary Butler, who is the Speaker of the Welsh Assembly, said that there is never a question raised about merit when it comes to nominating men and men's candidacy. The issue of merit is only raised in relation to women and women's candidacy. That's a question. Paula Bradley says that yes, Northern Ireland's culture is about women's roles and, you know, the traditional roles. And she says, we are so much more than that. We have so much to say and so much to give. And that's a politician speaking from the heart about having more women in political life. Katrina Ruan makes the important political point about putting women into winnable seats, that if you have women as candidates, there is no point in having them there just as candidates just to make the party look good. You have, as a party, have to live the ambition and put those women into seats where they stand a reasonable chance of succeeding, and not just put them in no-hope seats. And clearly Katrina looks for quotas. Sean Rogers from the SDLP basically says that a cultural shift is required, and that's required to have a truly democratic and modern parliament. And he's indicating that changing the system is not a patronising concession. So he's basically saying, look, this thing about patronising women just isn't part of the conversation. Joanne Dobson says we have to make politics more attractive to young women. By making it more attractive to young women, you have young women elected. You have more young women running. You have women and men of all ages representing the things that young people want to see brought up. Another Sinn Féin MLA, Maeve McLaughlin, said that the challenge is for political parties to take it on board and political party leaders to be positive and to be radical in this area. Robin Swan from the UUP again talks about role models and saying that the challenge is to change the culture in politics and in the wider society. Trevor Lunn of the Alliance says 21 out of 108 is not proper representation. So you can see Karen McKevitt says we need to have some way of implementing this good report. Raymond McCartney says we have to take steps to address this unequal inequality in politics. The chairperson, Stephen Moutre of the DUP, says that we need to have a strategic and coordinated approach to increase the participation of women. And the last word can be left to Claire Sugden, who was very upfront, said that she was a feminist, and encouraged the other members in the chamber to ask to stand up and to admit that they were feminist. She said, not one. Okay, there was a bit of a silence. And then the speaker jumps in and says, I'm a feminist. So, there we go. So there is hope in Northern Ireland yet. There is a lot of work to be done. There are lots of challenges. But clearly from that report, there is a political consensus now that this is a serious issue and that issue has to be addressed. Perhaps it will ultimately lead to the introduction of quotas, especially for local government election, where women are less than 25% of local councillors and need to be increased in order to be among MLAs. But that's where we are at the moment, and that's the evidence for showing that quotas can make a difference. Thank you.